Hey, got the morning show with Aaron, and in the studio I've got our community board chairperson, Dennis Amor. Morning, Dennis.
Morning, Aaron.
All right, just lift that up so it's a bit closer to the mouth there. And so, I saw you just a few hours ago at the meeting, the wastewater hui in the church hall on Stewart Street, and I counted about 70 people in that room, so you never know when there's a lot of heat on Facebook whether that's going to translate into humans in person, but yeah, a lot of people there, I thought.
Yeah, no, it was a good crowd and a good mix of people of different ages, different backgrounds and that sort of thing. So it was really, really pleasing to see people taking an interest.
Mm. And the main takeaway from it in terms of an explanation is that the computer problems were caused by human error.
Yeah, that's what it boils down to. The PLC, or the Programming Logic Controller, basically had some errors. It had a couple of errors in it. It's worked pretty well for the last 20-odd months and because they put 3 years of data in it. But then at some point there was a small error which led to the discharges on the incoming tide.
And as soon as you get into discussions, I wasn't there for a lot of it, but as soon as you get into discussions about how to stop that from happening, you do come up against the fact that you're asking human beings to do very boring, detailed work and get it right 100% of the time. So I guess the question is, how confident are we going forward, especially as mistakes kept happening? Like, they tried to fix it and it didn't fix. And then they fixed it and then it happened again 2 weeks later. Like, it's...
Yeah, I guess they fixed the immediate problem. And they obviously... Well, would appear they didn't look ahead at the programming to see whether there was any more errors in it. Mm. And there was one more in it. Going forward, you know, they have created some more alarms to look at what's happening, and they're also improving the validation of the data. So there'll be more eyes across the data when it's loaded into the PLC.
Yeah, and we are talking, folks, about a row of ones and zeros that go 1, 0, 1, 0 for that would have been 900 or 1,000 days if it's 3 years worth. So, yeah, this is like I wouldn't be the right person to be doing the checking or putting those numbers in. I would be too error prone for something like that. You require, yeah, it's an unnatural human activity. That's what worries me. It's really hard to get it right.
Yeah, we'll have some discussions with them on whether we can use an Excel spreadsheet to do, you know, cross checking on it and that sort of thing. And there will be some ways that we can automate the checks, I would imagine. So we just need to have a bit more discussion with Matt on that. With Watercare on that to see how we can do that.
Yeah, actually, I can imagine you could use that. So there were we had the council CEO, we had council engineers, we had Watercare representatives, we had people from the Waters Governance Board. You and Lisa were there. The regional council came to observe as well. There must have been about 10 people in the room. That, to me, that does indicate that the problem's been taken seriously.
Yeah, no, when the second one was flagged to us and that sort of thing, we made it very clear then that we wanted a public meeting, and Lisa pushed for a public meeting within council, I'm talking about Lisa Thompson, our local councillor.
Yeah.
She pushed for that, and we also reinforced that we wanted representatives from the directors of the Watercare Governance Board to be there. So they took that on board, and three of the directors came out to the meeting. David Wright, Garth Dibley, and Ricky Waiwai were there, along with Matt Telfer, who's the operations manager for Watercare, who was the chief speaker.
Yeah,
and did the explanations, and one of his young engineers was there also. So that was really good that we got that sort of representation. Plus, Waikato District Council, as you said, Gavin Iron, CEO, Chief Executive, was there. Megan May, Operations Manager, General Manager Operations, was there.
Which means she's the senior manager overseeing that department.
Yeah, well, Watercare at the end of the day reports up into her. So, you know, the people that we had, the good representative, I think they've got the message that we don't want any more spills and it needs to be fixed.
And I think the number of people who turned out probably will emphasise that to them. Because I think one of the things, I mean, this is probably, of all the situations in the country, this may well be the most important one to get right, in the sense that we have a very proactive, engaged community. And everyone wants to know that it's working well, and we've got a very vulnerable situation where our system is right on the harbour, and we're living on the harbour. We're kite surfing over the top of the outlet pipe. So, you know, it's really hard to miss here when something goes wrong and there's always a big uproar. I can't imagine another community in a situation where it's tougher.
No, you know, I was talking to a friend at work on the week during the week, and he's from down in the Christchurch area, and they had all sorts of problems there 15 years ago with discharges and that sort of thing. And he said now they've put a new system in. He said you can actually see the differences in the harbour and that sort of thing.
Mm.
So, you know, the good thing is that we are well down the route to having a new system and that sort of thing, as Matt explained last night. And that, so, you know, let's hope that we can get there sooner.
Yeah, so they are. So the situation is, I guess we need to give some explanation. Because this work was contracted out to Watercare, that's why there has to be the governance, Waters Governance Board is part of that, is it? Like, are they kind of like a...
Well, the Water Governance Board sits, it's the Water Governance Board that sits across, as I believe it sits across this Waikato contracts. And that sort of thing. And it looks at what's going on with all the water assets within Waikato District Council.
Okay.
So that you've got Gavin Irons on the board along with David Wright, Garth Dibley, Ricky Waiwai, and I'm not sure who the others are off the top of my head.
All right. So we won't go into the reasons why that needs to exist, but I guess because it's contracted out, there's something in there for that. So they're meant to be an independent oversight, I guess.
Yeah.
In a lot of ways. All right. So, and that system started, it's just a few years ago. So we presume that Watercare, mostly people have been impressed, like even John Lawson has been impressed with, who likes to criticise the most, has been impressed with Watercare up to this point. I remember, so they've inherited a system from the original setup, which was just the council ran all the three waters itself. And I remember, I don't know if you remember, if you were paying attention in 2016 much, when we were having actual sewage releases into the harbour several times in the space of a few months. And in my opinion, it turned out that one of the council managers was kind of behind it all, in the sense that because he would come to meetings and say, oh, we're meeting all my KPIs. And it wasn't until someone thought to ask, what are those KPIs, that we realized that they were accepting too high a risk for the situation. You know, it's like one time in 1,000 days you might get a overflow or something like that.
Right, yep.
Yeah, and if that was Hamilton, you'd just mop it up and get on with things. But here it's different because it's going in the harbour. So he was there for a while, and while he was still there, several staff left.
Right,
And it looked like they were being blamed for the problem, and it may have turned out to be him. In the end, he left. I actually asked him a question. I actually said things through the comms department asking if he was going to resign.
I wasn't.
So the council staff were gutted out at that time, so anyone who had institutional knowledge was gone. So I feel like they weren't in a good place at that time, no matter what, and that's probably where the system came from, is that period 10 years ago.
Yeah, possibly could have, but I think, you know, having Watercare there, they are looking after these types of systems in a whole lot of different places.
Yeah.
So they've got a lot of high-level expertise that they can call on to assist with our system locally and that sort of thing. But I think, you know, the reality is wastewater systems right through Waikato District Council. Excuse me. Right through Waikato District Council, us all suffering. You know, they have problems at Te Kawaramiri and other places.
Yeah.
And there's a huge amount of new infrastructure required over the next 10 years on several of the wastewater plants throughout the Waikato District Council region.
At a huge expense.
Yeah, at a huge expense. You know, what were we talking, 20-odd million for our one and things like that. So we're talking big numbers.
Yeah, and this is where the whole Three Waters issue came from, that burst into national consciousness and then went sideways into different issues. But the original problem is that the whole of this country is facing huge expenses that councils or ratepayers can't really afford in this realm. So
no, it's going to be interesting to see what this government does about that. They're obviously aware of the problem. They've talked about pulling back from the Three Waters philosophy. And that sort of thing, but they're going to have to come up with another arrangement. And you know, I know our councillors have been discussing, you know, approaches to government to cover offset some of these costs so that ratepayer doesn't have to pay.
Yeah,
you know, I think the good thing with us is that we've nearly got a project that's all but ready to go.
Mm.
You know, it's in the funding's been approved for it. It's in the tender phases. and that sort of thing. So
this is the land-based disposal system.
There's still issues to be sorted out about the land disposal.
Was that discussed last night at all?
Matthew Telfer from Watercare basically explained that that hasn't been settled as to where that will be done and how it will be done, other than the fact that they are looking at subterranean sort of disposal that we've talked about before.
So exactly
where it's likely to take place and whether they can convince landowners to come on board is still up in the air a little bit.
So my understanding was that they were negotiating with Raglan Land Co. for a site on Mangatawhiri Road. Let's be blunt, were Raglan Land Co. playing hardball? They would be the toughest negotiators in town, I would have thought. Has that fallen through? Do we have an answer about that?
I don't know. I haven't asked the question, and I'm not close enough to negotiations, so no, I don't know.
Okay. Is this the frustration of being on the community board, that you're kind of quite distant from a lot of things?
Well, and
The practical reality is that you end up being distant from things?
Yeah, well, you know, at the end of the... Yeah, we can input into there, but we're not part of the negotiations for obvious reasons. That sort of thing. So we are dependent on the people within council and Watercare doing those negotiations and working that process through.
Okay, all right. So it's still happening, but we're not sure. We don't know when at this point.
No, and we don't know exactly where.
Yeah. Oh, now one of the other things was the explanation about the water quality, because I've seen people in the community saying if they're putting out warnings, it must be for a reason. It must be because it really is dangerous, but they've been saying it's actually not that dangerous. They've just been precautionary. So what was the... Have you got a summary for actually how unhealthy is the wastewater that's been put out?
Well, I can't comment on how unhealthy it is. The reason the signs go out is that if they do discharge on an incoming tide, it is a breach of their consent.
Yeah.
So they do have to put out signs notifying the public of that. And so the signs do discourage people from swimming and collecting shellfish during that period. Now, the Matt did give figures on what the effluent or the water that's discharged is, and it is all within tolerances, within their consent and that sort of thing.
Yeah.
But how, you know, I'm not a health expert to see how much that would impact on you if you were swimming near the outfall or things like that.
He was giving numbers like a level was 31 and the wastewater coming out was at 1.6. So I don't know whether that's parts per million or what that is. I've got no clues, but that sounded very safe when he gave those numbers. But I guess the idea is that people need to know so they can make a choice about whether they collect shellfish or go swimming.
Yeah, and I guess that's the purpose of the notices, that, you know, they are there. You know, at the Surf Life Saving Club, the notices are out and we end up with lots and lots of people in the water swimming and that sort of thing. Okay, that's on Naranua Beach. It's not within the harbour area, but you also see the kite surfers out there. You see guys paddling kayaks out there and things like that, and a few swimmers around. There doesn't seem to be, I'm not aware of anyone that's been affected during that period.
Okay. What do we need to know? What are they doing next? I guess we should answer that question.
Well, obviously, they're pushing hard with the new effluent system, so that's sort of a no-brainer. That's going ahead. There's no change in that. As far as the existing systems going, they've created, they've looked at how they'll do the validation, and they're looking at a couple more layers of checking on the validation of the programming of the PLC.
Yeah.
So there'll be more eyes across that and looking at how they're doing that. And they've also created some more alarms on the system to look at any anomalies within the system that might be happening, getting earlier advice on them and that sort of thing.
Yeah, the thing that concerned me about the alarm system they did have was it was dependent on the same faulty data that was causing the problem, and I would hope in the future that an alarm system is completely independent. The same as I keep talking about this, I get alerts when we go off the air or there's silence on the air, and they don't come from the same computer that's playing the music.
There's no one
in the studio.
Yeah, well, we didn't actually ask Matt that question, but yeah, one would hope that they've got another overarching PLC that's looking at the controls PLC. Yeah,
it's a shame because I was going to ask that, but I had to go away from our station meeting.
We missed the opportunity.
I thought someone would say something. I just thought it would come up. Anyway, okay, so that's... do you think it'll happen again? You're going to say, I hope not.
No, I'm just I'm thinking about the question. Look, it's like you said, it's an old, we've inherited an old system. Or Watercare inherited an old system. A lot of the programming is sort of, well, I wouldn't say antique, but it's older type of programming. It's based on a PLC and things like that. There's always the possibility that could happen again. The fact that we've now got more validation going on, we've got more alarms in place and things like that, one would like to think that, no, we won't have any further spills.
Yeah, and I know the fact that they sent so many people out means they're taking it seriously.
Yeah.
My only question would be, does Watercare, if they have to do extra work, is that going to be charged back to the council? I guess it will.
Well, I guess it comes back to what's in their contract.
Yeah.
And what how their contracts are based, whether it's the output-driven contract and that sort of thing. So I would be hopeful that, no, it's the onus is on Watercare. They've got a contract to sort of run the wastewater system and then do the discharges and that sort of thing. So any additional works because of errors that they've made should be incurred and the costs covered by them.
Mm. Okay, let's move on to another thing that we're finding frustrating. The what are we calling these things? The structure plans for communities. We as in many people have been asking council for a structure plan for this community for some time. I've messaged the council about it myself, but you've also been getting answers, and they're saying we're going to have one, but not very soon.
Yeah, the structure plans throughout the district seem to be, from what I can gather, are done in an order set by councillors and that sort of thing, and Raglan one's not quite at the top of the list at the present time. Where it is on the list, I'm not sure. And it is frustrating with the looking at the population growth that's forecast for Raglan over the next 30 years. And all the development that's going on. So we have had discussions. There's been discussions with community board members, with several other people within council, looking at plans around roading and various other things. So I'm going to be having further discussions with our councillor and, you know, look at whether we can put in a sort of develop with the community a mini structure plan.
So we do it ourselves is what you're saying.
Yeah, yeah. Well, it won't be called a structure plan. We'll probably have to call it something else, otherwise we'll get into trouble. But effectively, just look at, you know, what do we want in the community going forward? What's the priorities? You know, how's that going to affect, you know, how the development's going to affect roading and social services and everything else that we've got. Quite a lot of the information sits in Raglan Naturalist booklet and things like that. But, you know, we need to update that, look at how we move that forward.
Because we've had, obviously, Labour weekend, the problems with the one-way bridge reared their head. And maybe that's not a big deal. Like, every now and again, we have a weekend where there's queues. Like, you know, it's not that hard to deal with.
No.
People in Auckland would laugh at us for the for the length of time we had to wait in those queues. But we've also got the issue that if they're going to build a road around to the back of Rangatahi, that's going to relieve some of the pressure on there. Maybe we don't need to spend some money on that bridge. So
you're saying, are you advocating for not two-laning it, Aaron?
I know I'm creating a discussion. I'm just here to talk about stuff. I'm actually really lucky I can talk about this and none of it comes back to me because I'm not making any decisions. So
no, I know Lisa and Chris had a meeting yesterday with some of the roading people and that sort of thing, and they did, one of the things that Chris said they did talk about was the one lane bridge.
Yeah.
And you know, how often is it a problem, and during those periods, which might be 10 days of the year, do you have stop go people on it for 4 or 5 hours? And if I look at Labour weekend on the Sunday in particular, where we had the Surf Life Saving reunion, and
yes,
several of us went over a couple of times during the day. I came back about 2 o'clock in the afternoon, came into town because I was going to the club, and I guess I had to wait about 3 minutes, and I was first stopped at Puhakna Marae, but from there into the bridge and over the bridge was probably only 2 or 3 minutes.
Oh, okay.
So, you know, if you did have, say, stop-go people there on those key weekends and those key days, and we probably know when most of those are, I think it's probably only from sort of 10 o'clock to 3 o'clock or 4 o'clock in the afternoon, and it would probably alleviate a lot of the problem for very little cost.
Mm.
Not saying that longer term we have to look at a bigger picture.
Yeah, but the urgent, it may not be that urgent an issue.
Yeah.
I think what it is we have such a contrast between winter and summer here. Like, you know, like the weekend before Labor weekend was dead quiet, and then Labor weekend hits bang. It's completely different. And I think it probably shocks us long-time residents, so...
Yeah, and I think a little bit of about is, you know, before Labor weekend, we'd had a lot of wet weather and inclement weather. And all of a sudden, we get a couple of brilliant days and it's a long weekend, and everyone says, oh, let's go somewhere.
Yeah, I'm sure the local businesses weren't complaining. They would have been very happy with that. But there's also a discussion about how many, are we happy with the number of visitors we have? Do we want even more visitors turning up, and what that means for the town? And if you make the driving really easy, that always encourages more people to come, and we've got to... Do we have that discussion around? That doesn't fit into a structure plan, does it? Like, where do we have that discussion?
Well, it's interesting because you get some people that are saying we don't want more visitors.
Yeah,
you know,
exactly.
Because we can't come to town and get a car park, et cetera, et cetera, and that sort of thing. And there's that group that don't want to see a whole lot of visitors, but then they're not in the retail business. You've got the ones in the retail business who are encouraging more and more people to come and visit Raglan and experience, and you know, have the experience of being here.
Yeah.
And that, so you've sort of got a balance of both.
I mean, I've been here for over 20 years, and when I first got here, the busy summer period was about 6 weeks long, really, over Christmas,
yeah,
New Year's.
Yeah, exactly.
And then it's gradually got bigger and bigger and bigger, and now it hits at Labor weekend and goes all the way through to Easter, and both those weekends are monstrous. And it's like, you know, how many more people need to keep coming before we're satisfied? You know, like, it's grown a lot over the last 20 years. So it's,
yeah,
just these are questions. This is like I say, I'm in this privileged position. I can ask these questions on the air, and I don't have to. I'm not responsible for what I say. So,
well, yeah, but they do highlight some of the issues that we've got to look at addressing, and you know, the parking one's one of the ones that falls into that. The roading one falls into that. Then you've got your other services, such as wastewater and potable water, and all those sorts of things that come into it. So, you know, we've got to look at those in a plan going forward fairly quickly, so that we can see. And then, and you're also out of your season, you know, on the off seasons or the shoulder seasons, you also got to consider what's going on with sport and people coming in for sport and things like that.
Yeah,
because,
yeah.
You know, I don't know how many soccer teams you've got now, but when you have the local games here, that drags a lot of people in from over the hill and the opposition teams.
There'll be 250 kids on average this winter. Oh, no, that's at the primary age. Then there's three or four teams at the secondary age as well.
Yeah, so if you take 250 kids in Raglan playing soccer, the opposition coming is probably a couple of parents and a child, or maybe two children, to watch their brother play. So, you know, you could have an influx of 1,000 people for half a day.
Yeah, I'm saying there's 250 in the club, so half of them will be away.
Oh, half go away and half at home.
Yeah, but still, okay. It does get pretty busy down there, especially on the weekend they have the Waka Ama.
Yep.
But we have the Māori Wardens to sort that out. Actually works quite well, to be honest.
Yeah.
And there's issues around that site, issues around sports, facilities for the future of the community. So the frustrating thing about the structure plan thing is we've got something up on a screen here, which is a structure plan for Ngāruawhi, Ahoratū, Hopohopu, Taupiri and Te Kōwhai. And their population, I'm looking at a graph or a table now of their population growth to 2040, and it's puny, almost non-existent compared to what we're projected for Raglan, yet somehow those areas have got a structure plan out of the council and we haven't. So, and you're saying that's not going to be, like, the long-term plan has been put in place next year, locking in place what's happening over the next 3 years, and we won't be in that.
That would be the feeling I've got at the moment, but we're pushing against that.
Yeah,
because, you know, something has to happen here, and it has to happen fairly quickly.
I mean, I know there's crazy growth up north.
Yeah, Pokeno and those things in Te Kauwhata are just going crazy.
Yeah, and they've got like a public realm plan for Pokeno that I was looking at as well yesterday, and that looks quite useful, but it's not as like firmly this is this and this will be happening as the structure plan. But I would say after the areas up north, we are probably the ones faced with the biggest growth.
Oh yeah, we certainly would be compared with, you know, once you're south of Te Kauwhata, the Raglan would be one of the highest growth areas.
Mm. All right, maybe I need to interview the mayor.
Yeah, why not?
Why not? So, is there anything else? We're just about time to go. What have you? Anything you've been working on at the moment? That I haven't asked about?
No, because I've been out of town, as you're aware, for the last 3 or 4 weeks, working on another project.
Dennis has got some paid work. I thought you were supposed to be retired.
Yeah, well, I am.
Devoted to Raglan, Dennis.
I'm having fun, so I'm carrying on with it at the moment.
Okay. You haven't heard why the Regional Council never got around to sorting our bus out in time for summer, have you? No one else knows.
No, but I will ask the question and I will update you.
Okay, all right. Well, we shall leave it at that. And hopefully, and you said, yeah, Lisa and Chris had a conversation about roading with someone from council, like a roading plan for the community.
Yeah, so next time you're talking to Lisa, you can interview her on that, yes.
Yeah, okay. All right, Dennis, thanks heaps for coming in.
Thanks, Aaron. Appreciate time.
All right, folks, time for us to quickly move on to ad break, and we're going to be talking climate change after this.